calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the stars. London's calling. See, we ain't got. And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me will be David Hulley, who should be joining me shortly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against QPR at Craven Cottage Friday night. We'll also look back at the Capital One loss for Fulham against Stoke City Tuesday night, also at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, and as I wait for David before we do anything further, I do want to share some news with you again. I was contacted by the club to share this email they received. This will actually be in the program for the Wolves match. It was going to be in the program for the QPR match, but unfortunately they couldn't make it work in time. But they asked me if I would share this with the Cottage Talk listeners, and I'm happy to. Again, this is an email that went directly to Fulham Football Club, and again, I'm just sharing this with you. Again, this is a letter. I wondered if you might be so kind to find a way to thank your supporters for their help that they gave to myself, a number of other Stoke supporters who found themselves stranded in West London with no idea how to get back to their cars. We had left our car at Hillingdon, and others had done the same at Uxbridge. We traveled on the underground as far as South Harrow and were informed by the TfL that a problem with signaling meant no trains would be running any further. This left the train full of Stoke supporters with no idea where they were or how to get back to their cars. It was a number of Fulham supporters, young and old, traveling on the same train who came to our aid, assisted us to find the appropriate buses, and even when they parted company with us, gave instruction to ensure we reached the correct destination and, where appropriate, the correct connecting bus. They are a credit to your club, and without them, I would have been lost. TfL were useless, so please find a way to thank them on Friday. I know who they are. I do not know who they are, but perhaps a message on your big screen or a suitable PA announcement would show our appreciation. They are a credit to your club. Ian M. Davis. And again, the club asked me to share this email with all of you. And again, to the fans that helped out, the Stoke supporters, you are a credit to Fulham Football Club, to the Fulham supporters. And, again, you show me each and every time why I'm a Fulham supporter. This again, just shows me why we're a family club and why we care about each other. And I'm glad that the club actually contacted me that I could share this with you. Again, the Fulham supporters never amazed me of how wonderful they are. And again, they were helping out fellow supporters of another club. It truly is a wonderful thing. I'm glad I could read that out. All right. Well, while we wait for David to arrive, before we do that, I'm actually going to read out some team news and then play an interview done with Kid earlier. But let's start with the team news. This is right on the Fulham website. Again, you can see this right on FulhamFC.com. Ryan Fredericks returned to contention for Friday's meeting with Queen's Park Rangers is a timely one, with Kit Simons revealing that Jazz Richards is set to miss the West London Derby. Speaking in his pre-match press conference, the White's boss said, quote, this is Kit, the one fairly new injury concern is Jazz Richards, who picked up a knock in the game on Tuesday night against Stoke. Quote, the good news is it's nothing like as serious as it possibly could have been, but he's unlikely for tomorrow, but he shouldn't be out too long at all. He's had an ultrasound scan, and that looked very positive, so I'm quite pleased with that. Another quote, other than that, everyone else has come through the game on Tuesday night. Jamie O'Hara will be back fit and in contention, as well will Tom Kearney, who were both missing from the other night. Further positivity on the injury front comes in the news that a trio of first-teamers will get some minutes under their belt early next week. Again, another quote from Kit, Luke Garbutt's back in full training with us, as are Scott Parker and George Williams, Simons revealed. They'll all get game time in Monday night for the under-21s at Derby, and pretty soon they'll be back in contention for selection for the first team games. And when asked how much of a boost that is for the club, Simons replied, it's brilliant. Someone like Scott Parker, for example, just being in training with a group has been excellent because he's a real driving force behind the sessions. Another quote from Kit, so that's been a big plus, getting him back on the grass with the boys, and sooner rather than later, he'll be back in contention for games as well, which will be great. Last quote from Kit, we've got a very strong squad with good competition for places, and training's a joy at the moment. Okay, those are all quotes from Kit Simons in the team news that you can
actually read on the Fulham FC website. That's to get us going. Again, the big news is that Jazz Richards will probably not be involved in the QPR match, as he did pick up a knock in the last match. And we'll see how that goes, Kit. Again, I'm paraphrasing. It doesn't seem that it should be too long that he'll be out, but he probably will be out for this next match. Okay. All right, now I am going to play the interview done earlier today. This is Thursday, just so you know, when we're recording this. Done earlier with the full manager, Kit Simons, with Sarah Brooks, as always. Again, here is Kit.
Kit, I know there was a loss on Tuesday night against Stoke, and you made some changes, but there was a fantastic second-half performance from the boys that really should have resulted in at least extra time.
Yeah, I thought we played well. I thought first half we played okay, and we're very much in the game. I mean, their goal was fortuitous, I think, to say the least. I mean, he took it very well, Crouchy, but his Ben Pringle worked his socks off to get back in and towed the ball, but it went straight into Peter Crouch's path. He didn't even have to break his stride. So it was a little bit lucky from their point of view. I thought we played okay first half, but I said to the boys at half time, you know, okay, it's not good enough, really. We're better than that, and a bit more belief, a bit more urgency in some of our play. And we showed that second half and created a lot of chances, a lot of them late on in the game, but, you know, we probably should have at least, as you say, gone to extra time. So it's a little bit disappointing with that, but I was quite pleased with the performance. We mixed the team up a little bit. People needed game time, and, you know, I felt I could make the changes without particularly sort of weakening the side at all, and it I thought it worked out quite well overall.
And is that a culmination of the business over the summer to make sure that there is that strength and depth and you can make those changes and still believe that you've got a team that goes out there to win the game?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you need to assemble a squad rather than just have a mishmash of players thrown together. And that's what we've tried to do, is assemble the squad and sort of double up in positions and have good players in every position that, you know, like I say, you can get an injury and someone's got to come in, or you can make a change or suspensions, whatever it might be, whatever reason for, and the person you're bringing in can do, you know, pretty much an equally good job. So I'm pleased with the depth we got at the moment. You know, I think most managers would always rather have more players than less players. But I want a good sized squad, but I want quality, you know, and I honestly firmly believe that's what we're getting now.
One disappointment is an injury to Jazz Richards, but not as bad as you first thought it was.
No, well, coming in Wednesday morning, it had gone quite puffy, his knee, and there's fluid on it, and it looked, you know, quite a nasty injury to his ACL, his knee ligament. But then getting an ultrasound scan on that subsequently, it's nothing like as bad as we first feared. So he's going to be out for a short period of time, but nothing like what it initially looked like. So that's very good news, and obviously pleasing for us and great for Jazz.
And the good news, of course, is that Ryan Fredericks is back, even though he's been missing from the last couple of games.
That's right. I mean, my general way of sort of dealing with players coming back from injury, and, you know, obviously linked in with our medical staff, is to sort of err on the side of caution and maybe keep them back an extra day to build up their work with the physios and the balls before they come back into training with us. So we make sure, and I the worst thing for me is when players come back from injury, going to training and have to come off because they're not quite right. They've been rushed back. So we make sure when our players come back into training, they're right to go. You know, they're fully fit and fit for purpose, ready to go. And that was the case with Ryan. We sort of held him back a little bit. He was chomping at the bit to train. He said, no, an extra day with the physios doing the work that he needed. And as it happened, it was a good call because Jazz picked up this in the Stoke game. But now we've got Ryan fully fit and available. So that's very pleasing.
Casting my eye out on training this morning, I saw Scott Parker there and Luke Garbutt there. So that's great news for you, and I believe they're playing in the under-21s on Monday evening.
Yeah, that's great news. They're both, both chomping at the bit, really sharp in training. But, you know, they've both been out for a subsequent period of time, and they need to build up their game time. Make sure, again, I want them fully fit and available for selection, but only when it is right and they are, you know, fit and proper and ready to go. And we'll make sure that's the case. So, yeah, we've got an under-21 game up at the Ike Pro against Derby on Monday. And George Williams also get more game time in that in his recovery. So that's a great opportunity for these boys to get some first-team football, obviously, at a proper stadium and against a good Derby side. and that'll be good, great for them and great for the club.
QPR, I know that you've watched them quite a lot already this season. They managed to keep hold of a lot of their key players during the summer months. What are you expecting from them on Friday night?
Well, they're a strong outfit. We've got, as you say, they've got some good players that were linked with potentially moves away from the football club. I'm sure Chris was delighted when the transfer window finally closed, and he'd kept hold of the boys. Obviously, Charlie Austin is the main focus of their team, and he's the person that most people talk about, understandably, because he's an excellent player and a prolific goal scorer. But it's QPR are not just all about Charlie Austin. He's a big part of their play, don't get me wrong, and we need to make sure his threat is nullified on Friday night. They've got other good players as well who can hurt you and can cause you problems, so we need to be solid and resolute as a team, do that defensive side collectively, and then we've got good players, and I'm pleased with us going forward and attacking wise, what we can do and what we can create. I'm looking forward to what will be, I think, a fairly open, very entertaining game of football played in a fantastic atmosphere.
A lot's been made of conceding goals to set pieces against Sheffield, and yet on Tuesday night, as you've said, the goal came from a fortuitous situation. So you must have been pleased with defending, even though you made some changes.
Yeah, no, I was, very much so. I mean, we spoke about set pieces. I only actually had one corner against the Stoke in the game, but then we defended that pretty well. The Sheffield Wednesday game for me was a one-off game. We hadn't conceded from a free kick or a corner all season, and to do three in one game was inexplicable, really. We spoke about it, obviously, and I wasn't happy with it. The players knew that, and we looked at it, and we've worked on it subsequently on the training ground. We always worked on set pieces anyway, but we've sort of tinkered with it slightly and made a couple of changes we feel make us stronger and better. So, moving on, it's disappointing for that one game, especially if we scored two good goals away from home and should have got something out of the game. So that was disappointing, but moving on, it's happened, we've dealt with it, and we'll be better for it.
QPR travelling in numbers. I know that you were absolutely delighted with the crowd on Tuesday night. How important are they tomorrow night? What difference can they make?
Make a huge difference. Again, not wanting to harp on to the past, but when I played at Fulham, we'd turn up week in, week out, players expecting to win, the crowd expecting the team to win, and you could just sense that, and it was brilliant. Best time of my life playing football. I had an absolute ball, and I want these players to experience that, and I want this current the current Fulham fans to experience that as well. And I want everyone connected with the football club to be having good times that I feel we all deserve and we've worked hard to get. And I think that's a realistic possibility, and I think that will happen.
We wish you luck tomorrow.
Brilliant, thank you.
Okay, we are back, and that was an interview done earlier today, which is Thursday, with the full manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks, who does all these interviews with him. Again, a very good job by her. And before we go any further, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, sorry for being a bit late. My tennis committee meeting ran a bit late, so hope you managed without me, but I'm here and fully awake still as well, so nice to be back.
It's great to have you back, David. Listen, I just played the audio clip with Kit, and the big news coming from it, and again, you probably know about this, in case you don't, I will mention it one more time. He also announces during the press conference that Jazz Richards picked up a knock in the last match and probably will not be playing in the match. I can pretty much, almost 100% say that he's not going to be, because he did pick up a knock on his knee, and he is dealing with that. Kit, again, I'm paraphrasing, is making it sound like it's not a long-term situation. But that also means that we will probably be seeing Ryan Fredericks in his place. And one of the things that he did mention in this interview with Sarah is the amount of depth that we have at positions in case these situations come up, David. So what are your thoughts about the injury to Jazz Richards and also the possible replacement with Ryan Fredericks going in there at right back?
I was delighted. I'm not Jazz Richards' fan at all, really, and I think that Fredericks could be much more what we need if he can defend, of course. We haven't seen him really yet in a defensive role as such. We've seen a little cameo, but for what we saw going forward, you know, every time we have a match, one of the big complaints is we're far too narrow. So, you know, Fredericks is someone who can offer genuine width and genuine pace, and it's something we need. I saw a very interesting lineup on Twitter. I think it was Mike Gregg put it on.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later, David. Let's wait that so we go through it because I wanted to. I actually printed that out. I want to talk to you about that a little bit later, though.
Which was kind of utilizes Fredericks.
Yes.
Sort of abilities, but no, I mean I was, as I say, I want to see what Fredericks can do in that right back position. Anyway, so if it means that Kit's favourite Jazz can't play because he always does seem to play, then this is the perfect opportunity for Fredericks to show what he can do.
Absolutely, and David, I don't mean to cut you off. I wanted to save that for our preview because I want to go through that formation that Mike came up with, which I found fascinating. And it makes a lot of sense. Will Kit go with it? I don't think so, but it's something to consider, even for us to consider, because I like the look of this lineup that Mike came up with. But we'll talk about that a little bit later when we go through the lineups, if you don't mind. But before we go any further, I now want to go back and let's talk about the Stoke City match, because one of the situations with the Stoke City match is that I just want to mention this, you know, again, in our show beforehand, David, I said I wanted a strong lineup. I wanted the best possible lineup. Well, Kit did tinker with it a little bit, and then, of course, Mark Hughes tinkered with his lineup as well. What did you think about the starting 11s for both sides?
Well, we were throwing a bit of a curveball because when I sort of predicted what he was going to do, we didn't know about the injuries to O'Hara or Kearney. And obviously, I expected them both to play, so that knocked two people out. Obviously, I predicted that he was going to start with Corley, up front. I just saw that as being the situation. The other one, obviously, that threw me was the goalkeeper, of course, which is totally understandable, I think, to give Lewis a try. But I just assumed that he would probably stick with Lonergan to try and get some continuity with the defence there, but I wasn't unhappy with the lineup per se, though. I mean, I think Kit did go with literally as strong a lineup as he could from the players he had available, obviously the ones who weren't cup tied or injured, with the possible exception obviously giving Corley a run out ahead of Dembele, just as a chance to see what Corley could do. So, no, I wasn't too worried with that. The other one, of course, obviously, which we weren't expecting, but that was, I guess it was brought upon because of the injuries to Kearney and to O'Hara was seeing, obviously, Attila. And I think he held himself into account very well from what I saw and what I heard. So, but no, I think you have to give credit to Kit to a point that he did actually treat the match seriously and it, with one eye, obviously, on an important match tomorrow, he did actually make, I think, half an attempt to go out there and win it at least.
He did, David, and, you know, I have to give Kit credit. You know, I was saying I wanted the strongest possible lineup, but you just brought up a good point that, again, at the time, we didn't know, the situation with the injuries, if I can remember correctly, when we were talking about this. So again, we might have, I don't remember, it was a couple of days ago, you know, again, that's a long time for me, honestly. But regardless, I don't think he put up that bad of a starting 11. And Sakari Matilla actually got the man of the match, David. I don't know if you saw that, but again, I ended up watching the replay, and he played fairly well, David.
No, I only watched the highlights, but what I saw of him, even in that, I thought, he looked, you know, pretty useful. Someone who costs very little money, and
yeah,
it's a shame, I suppose, we don't get to see more of him really. But he's kind of again stuck in that central midfield position where we have quite a lot of options at the moment. Obviously, you know, we have Tunnicliffe, we have Parker, we have O'Hara, we have LBC, you know, even Heinemann, who surprisingly made an appearance in the second half. I was quite surprised because we kind of heard this, if you don't want to play for Fulham, we're not going to play you sort of thing. And then he makes a little cameo there. So I was a little bit surprised. I think if I was, you know, a player committed to Fulham, I'd want to be getting on the pitch before someone who wasn't if I was sitting on that subs bench. I know perhaps it was a fairly, you know, a necessity move. Perhaps, you know, whoever he replaced, I can't remember if he replaced Matilla or did he... I think he did replace Matilla, didn't he? Maybe Matilla retiring, I'm not sure. But I'd be disappointed if I was, say, a player committed to Fulham and someone who wasn't committed was getting on. So, I know obviously you've got a soft spot for Hyman and a lot of people do. And he is obviously a quality player for his age, especially. But that surprised me very slightly to see him feature.
You know what, David? I was as well. I threw it out there on our preview show of the Stoke City match. You know, I threw it out there. I said, you know, do you think he might play? You didn't think that there was any chance. And if he didn't play or didn't feature in the upcoming matches, I agree with you. I kind of understand that because of, you know, again, he won't commit to Fulham. He won't sign a new deal. And basically, you know, again, this is all speculation. But what we're hearing is he might not want to be at Fulham. So do you want to play a player that doesn't want to, you know, be a Fulham football club? So I was a little surprised, but, you know, again, in the cameo, he did a decent job. But, David, before we go on any further, what I'd like to do is I want to share some information with you. I know you just saw the highlights, and I'm just going to go through some information with you. First of all, you know, again, if you look at the first half, it was pretty even. I'm just basing on what I watched and what I listened to. It was pretty even. But, of course, they get the goal from Peter Crouch. Again, it was a fortuitous situation, as Kit said, because it was really a situation where Ben Pringle was trying to get the ball, and it just ended up right in the path of Peter Crouch, and I took advantage of the situation and scored. But it was a pretty even half, so they go in the half up 1-0. But what's interesting, going into the second half, you know, you're thinking, you know, what type of team are we going to get from Fulham? And I got to be honest with you, we saw a really decent team in the second half. I mean, they came out. They were the better team in the second half. I'm just going to go through some of the situations. You've seen the highlights, so most of what I'm reading is the highlights of what you saw, David. It started off very early in the second half with a shot by Ben Pringle. This is very early on. And then, again, you had the situation with Kaká going down right at the top of the box. You know, again, he was fouled right at the top of the box. It wasn't in the box. It was right outside the box. And you had the set piece by Ross McCormack, which then led to two corners. And then shortly after that, you had a third corner. So Fulham were really putting the pressure on, David. Then we switched to the 65th minute, and Tim Ream made a nice run to set up a cross by Ben Pringle, which led to a shot by Ross McCormack in short range that just went wide. And, David, he should have scored here. It was very close. 5 minutes later, you had a situation with LVC's cross led to a header by Tunnicliffe, which got to Moussa Dembele, and his shot went over the bar. But, again, a decent opportunity. Only 5 minutes later, you had a cross by Ream, which ended with a few half chances. Nothing really came out of it, but the ball was in the box. And 10 minutes later, you had the situation with LVC tried a shot from distance that bounced over the net. But the two situations that really stood out for me, David, were in stoppage time. You had a shot by LVC in the second minute of stoppage time, a shot from a cross by Ben Pringle. Again, great save by Shea Given, which kept the match 1-0. And then 1 minute later, Dan Byrne had a shot that went off the crossbar. So Fulham really had the pressure on. And just to back up all of that information from the second half, to talk about how well Fulham played in the second half, if you look at the overall stats of this match, Fulham had 52% of the possession. Stoke had 48%. Total shots, David, Fulham had 12. Stoke had 5. On target, Fulham only had 2 on target. Stoke had 1. Corners, this is interesting, 5-1 in favor of Fulham. This is the glaring one, David, that shocked me. Crosses, Fulham had 21, Stoke only had 4. So, again, you know, I think it really shows that Fulham actually played pretty well in the second half, David. They, you know, again, it's, you know, it's a Capital One Cup match. You know, I don't know what we can fully take from it, but I was encouraged by what I saw in the second half from Fulham. What are your thoughts about what I just shared?
Well, yeah, I mean, I listened to the commentary, and it was clear from the commentary we were on top second half. But the thing that stood out for me, you know, is still an issue, is that despite all this pressure and everything, we had 2 shots on target the whole match. And that just isn't good enough, not at home. You know, I mean, OK, Stoke can say, well, we only had 1 shot on target the whole match, and we won it from that. which is true. I mean, really, they should have had another. The miss by Odunwingie was pretty poor. But for Fulham, it's not good enough. I mean, I'm sorry to kind of, you know, take the gloss off what was a reasonably positive second half, but two shots on target the whole match. You can't expect to win matches with that low a shot ratio. Yes, it did work for Stoke, but that's a slight freak, I'd say, really. You know, you'd be looking at matches where, I don't know, you have 20 shots and you have maybe 10 on target and you score two or three, maybe. That would be a more pleasing sort of numbers, I think.
Sure.
You know, at the end of the day, if you have two shots on target, you can't score more than twice, as it is, obviously. And even if you convert half your chances, one goal wouldn't have been enough to win the match. So that's what worried me a bit, really. The build-up play was certainly better. We were getting into better positions, but, there should have been more shots on target. I mean, McCormack twice scuffed at things. I think both times he should have hit his shots first time. And also, I think on the radio as well, they're a little bit critical about LBC, thinking that a player of his skill perhaps should have hit the target when the keeper was out of the goal and he's just had that kind of lob straight back in there. But that was what stood out for me, unfortunately. Despite everything that was positive, the two shots on target was a big negative for me.
Okay, and you have every right to point that out. And my counter to that, and again, good point by you, two shots is not enough. But I think you also have to take in consideration who they were playing. And I know that Stoke City are at the bottom of the Barclays Premier League, but these are Premier League players, and I thought Fulham did a nice job against Premier League players, David. Again, we know all the names. You know, again, I could run through the names of the players. You know, you're talking about Peter Odunwingie. You mentioned him. Peter Crouch, you know, we talked about him in the preview show. You had, you know, you actually had Shaqiri come off the bench. They've actually got some serious talent, and they have some really good defenders as well. And, again, listening to the match and then watching it, you know, you could see that their positioning was very good. Again, they are Premier League side, so I think that was a factor as well. Defensively, they are a well-drilled team. But you're right, David. In the end, you need more shots on target. I do agree with you on that. I'm not going to disagree. But I did like the fight in the second half, David.
No, it was certainly something approaching what you would expect, really. You know, it was better because at least in the second half we've improved upon our first half. So too many times we've had a maybe reasonable first half, and then second half we've come out and we've been outfoxed, out-tacticked or whatever by the other team, and, you know, we've been very, very flat. So it was quite stirring, and, yeah, against, you know, supposedly a higher opposition as well. So I can't be completely critical, but it was just I guess it's just a basic thing that if you don't create that many scoring chances, you know, you're going to find it hard to win games still.
I totally agree, but is there something positive you can take out of this? I know what you're talking about, the lack of shots. Can you, again, go on my theme here, and again, we're going into the QPR match. Can you take something out of this? Can the players and kids say, you know what, we really did a nice job pressuring a team like Stoke? If we can do that, we can certainly do that against QPR. Nothing against QPR, but can it show the players that we can hang with a Premier League side? We certainly can do better in the league, David.
Oh, I mean, the logic says certainly that we should be able to better that against, you know, a lower team, most certainly. But obviously these things don't always work as logically as that, unfortunately.
You know, of course, they don't.
You know, you've got local derbies and teams raise themselves for matches. And, you know, we had nothing to lose, really. We were 1-0 down against a Premier League side in a one-off match. So it didn't really matter if we lost 10-0 or whatever, if we're throwing everyone forward, you know, because it doesn't affect your goal difference or whatever else. You know, you've got to win it on the night, so you've got to do what it takes. So I think you can throw a bit more caution to the wind. And in the main, it worked, apart from, the one glaring miss by Odunwingie. They didn't really catch us on the break at all. In fact, they were quite flat, Stoke, really. They didn't seem that...
Yeah, they were.
They didn't seem that interested at all, really. They were quite happy to hold on to their 1-0 lead, sit back. But so, no, I mean, certainly, if you could translate what we saw on Tuesday to tomorrow, then you'd think logic would suggest that we should, you know, do even better. But as I say, it doesn't always work like that, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't. Unfortunately, it doesn't.
But,
it doesn't always, but I'm hopeful, David.
Yeah. But if they can show that kind of intent and a bit more passion like that, then it can't help. And, you know, certainly attacking the Hammersmith End in a partisan match against local rivals, the crowd will really be sort of on their side as well, egging them on. So, yeah, you would imagine that it would work well.
I'm just saying, just take that approach, you know, that you had in the second half and take it to the match against QPL, like you said, with the crowd behind you, you know, feed off that and really get behind it and just go for it. Because, David, you know, again, we're going to go through previewing this match right now. And I respect the opponent. I do. I respect QPR. This is a winnable match at home. This is a match. I know it's a local derby. I know who they are. This is a match Fulham can win. And let's start here again. Let's look where QPR in the league. They're currently ninth, but they've played one more match than Fulham. They've won three. They have three draws, and they've lost twice. Their goal differential is +1, and they are on 12 points. Fulham are currently 16th, and they are currently on 8 points with basically they're even right now. You know, again, no plus or minus. They are even at 0 right now. In 7 matches, they've won 2, drawn 2, and they've lost 3 times. So, again, they are completely even. They've scored 11, and they've given up 11. That's a little interesting there. What's interesting, goals against for QPR is a little bit higher at 13. Just a little factoid there. All right. Let's now look more at QPR, David. And again, this is, you know, what's interesting about them when I was really looking at some video of them today, what's interesting is that it's not really, you know, everyone's going to focus on Charlie Austin, and it really isn't all about Charlie Austin. He's very dangerous. He's their leading goal scorer. He has scored 7 goals, and someone that we're going to be talking about a little bit. But also they have players like Matt Phillips, Massimo Luongo. You know, we're all familiar, unfortunately, with Carl Henry, you know, from the situation. I don't mean that, you know, he's a bad person, but I'm talking about the unfortunate situation with him and Bobby Zamora a few years ago. So fans might be familiar with him, and, of course, the goalkeeper Green. Everyone's probably familiar with him. It's a solid team. But, again, I see this as a winnable match, David. Again, I went to whoscored.com to give me some characteristics of QPR. I'm just going to read them with you, and then we'll really get into this preview. Again, QPR strengths, according to whoscored.com, creating chances through individual skill, coming back from losing positions, stealing the ball from the opposition, finishing scoring chances. We see that, obviously, with Charlie Austin. Aerial duels. Queen's Park Rangers' weaknesses, avoiding offside, keeping possession of the ball, avoiding individual errors, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, defending against through-ball attacks, protecting the lead. Okay, Queen's Park Rangers style. This is their style. Take long shots, attacking down the right. That is evident if you watch them on video. They do attack very well down the right-hand side. They play with width. That you can see as well. They play the offside trap, consistent first 11, playing in their own half. Okay, that is their style, David. And now let's go, after I've gone through the style, let's talk about Charlie Austin. And you were formerly a goalkeeper, so let's talk about this. This is a very dangerous striker. If you're Kit and the coach and staff, what would be your game plan to containing Charlie Austin, if you can?
Well, I think they have someone, you know, assigned to mark him. They have to make sure that he has his own marker, and that guy sticks to him like glue. Easier said than done, I know, but typically, you know, a lot of teams play with kind of one up front, so one of the central defenders normally tends to man mark the main striker while the other one floats. And often in the old days with Fulham, we used to see that Aaron Hughes was actually the one who was the man marker, and Hanglin was more the free roll. So whether, you know, perhaps, you know, we don't know who the team's going to be exactly, but if it's an unchanged side, maybe Ream will be given the job of man-marking Austin, and Stearman more of a free role. But I think that's what you're going to do. You've got to, you know, identify the danger man and then make sure that someone does a job on him, really. You can't give him space to wriggle free, because once he's got that yard or something, he could, you know, it's too late. The damage is done. So, for me, I think it's a man-marking job on him by whoever is identified as being the best person for that job.
And I totally agree with that, David, and I'm glad that you brought up Aaron Hughes, because, again, that's a you know, when you're thinking about playing one up front, which they do, they typically play a 4-2-3-1, so you're talking about one striker. So you need someone that can basically mark him wherever he goes. And you could be right. It could be Tim Ream in this match. We'll see who it ends up being. I would imagine that would be the game plan to trying to contain him. But, David, they also play, you know, again, I just went through this. They do play with width. They do go down the right-hand side. Are you concerned with our left-hand side? Now, I know you like James Husband, and it could be, say, Ben Pringle. Is that a concern for you in this match if that's their strength?
Well, I don't think Pringle has shown much in a defensive way, really. I mean, he does come back, but he's not that strong in that department, so it is going to be much more reliant on whoever's at left back, and then that may be obviously James Husband. So I'm not too concerned with Husband at the moment. You know, he's quite quick, and I think he is a reasonable defender. It's as much as Pringle's job to be someone like O'Hara or Tynecliffe, if they're playing, who's sitting in front of the defence to come over as well when, obviously, if you know, to double up on that side to make sure you're marking people. But I think it's the same either way. Whoever's playing at left back or left midfield, it's going to be the same situation. They're going to have to be vigilant, and they're going to have to try and do the best they can to stop these attacks, because we've seen this in the past from Fulham.
Yes.
That was our problem last season, especially. It was a problem at Sheffield Wednesday last week. People getting into advanced positions, crossing the ball, and conceding goals from crosses and set pieces. So that's something that, again, we have to be vigilant with.
I totally agree, David. They need to be closing down on these players that are about to do these crosses. They need to be, like you said, they need to be much tighter on them and not allow them the space that they've been getting. And, again, we saw that all last season. We did. And we saw that in the Sheffield Wednesday match. You know, watching back, it's like I'm watching last season, David. So I understand where you're going on that. All right. Let's now go to the key players in this match. You know, we've already identified the situation with Charlie Austin. So would it be one of the center backs is your key, or would it be the back four? Would it be the goalkeeper? Who are your key players in this match?
Well, we're at home, remember, here. And, you know, in a potentially winnable match, and a match that we really should be winning, because if we lose this match, not only is it bad for our league standing, it's also very bad for our local standing, and, you know, the sort of we'll never hear the end of it, or not for a long while anyway. And if, you know, if Kit's job is ever in danger, he's going to get 10 times as much stick if we get beaten at home by QPR than obviously we get beaten at home by a team that we don't have such rivalry with. I mean, Martin Yole probably kept his job a lot longer because of the 6-0 thrashing of QPR a few seasons ago. So it's a match that we need to win in more than one way, really, for more than one reason. So it's a game that, you know, we have to really take to them as well. Sheffield Wednesday, I could just see it happening that we were going to be up against it and we needed to defend. But, you know, to say the same thing for a home match, yes, we do need to defend, but it's a bit of a negative foot to start off with. You know, we need to take the game to them. We want, you know, the forwards to be putting them under pressure. We want the midfield to be putting them under pressure. We need to be forcing them into the mistakes. We don't want to, you know, be worrying about what's happening at their back, because we want to be worrying them at their defence. You know, attack is the best form of defence and all that. And if we are, you know,
I agree with that,
like
by the way.
Like we did against Stoke, I suppose, really. If we're pushing forward like that, their opportunities will be few and far between to put pressure on our defence. So
I totally agree with that.
You know, the balance of it has to be that we are putting the pressure on them, really. So for me, the key players are going to be sort of our attacking midfielders, you know, maybe Jamie O'Hara, obviously, because he tends to pull the strings, and people like Kearney if he's playing, and maybe Pringle if he's playing, and then the two strikers, which are, I would assume would be, you know, McCormack and Dembele. A real chance for Dembele to become a local hero very quickly as well, if he can
absolutely
get behind
absolutely.
Them. I don't know if Clint Hill plays. Does Clint Hill still play? Is he about 45 now? But always someone who seems to get a lot of stick for being not a very good defender. I'm sure he's probably a lot better defender than people say he is, but you could just imagine someone with the pace and strength of Dembele taking advantage of that if that's one of their Achilles heels.
Well, let me ask you this. Again, I was going to talk about this a little bit when we went through the starting 11, but I was talking to Matt Smith. We did the coaching corner with Matt Smith, and I was looking at this match, David, and again, we're just talking about key players. I think a key player could be Ryan Fredericks. It could also be Tom Kearney. It could be the players on the right-hand side, and I'm going to explain why. The left back for QPR is someone that we know. It's Paul Konchesky. Paul Konchesky is a solid left back. He's also 34 years old, David. If I'm Fulham, I run at him all day. That's what I would do. I want to get your thoughts on that because I think this is a possible matchup, especially with Ryan, because we're assuming it's going to be Ryan Fredericks. Let's say it's Ryan Fredericks and Tom Kearney going down the right-hand side. Could you see this as a potential matchup for Fulham to exploit and then really, really open things up for, say, Dembele and McCormack?
Well, I think if Fredericks is up to speed and fit, he can do it against younger people. We saw that, that one against...
That's my point. Yeah.
Against Blackburn, I think, wasn't it, where, he's outpaced two guys over a very short space. So, the fact he doesn't need to worry about someone being 25 or 35 or whatever because he's got a lot of natural pace anyway. So the interesting thing would be how much license to go forward he has, though, if he is actually playing as a right back in a 4-4-2. Obviously, we saw him as a right midfielder in a 4-4-2.
Right.
And he did have the safety net of having Richards behind him. And indeed, they swapped a couple of times. But if he's going to go forward, you can't say Tom Kearney is going to be dropping back there into cover because he's not, because that's not going to be happening. So it's a different dynamic, really, for the team. But nevertheless, the prospect on paper is very exciting, the thought of Fredericks going down the wing and pairing them back and taking people on. And because certainly, especially if Kearney's playing in that right midfield position as he has, it's just the only way we're really going to get any width on that side, because Kearney's never going to give you natural width. He's always going to want to come inside. So, it could be a very, very interesting matchup on that side.
Right, that's why I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I was curious your thoughts on it. I was speaking to Matt about it. We were talking about that as well. And I was just looking at their fullbacks and thinking about the possibilities of, say, James Husband down one side, David, and potentially Ryan Fredericks down the other, and maybe they could really do some damage, on both sides. But again, it's risk-reward, like you just mentioned. You got to be careful because you could leave yourself wide open to the counter, and it will be interesting to see. Again, I'm assuming he's going to be the right back. If he is the right back, how much leeway he gets going forward? Because I would like to see him attack. I would. I would like to see him and Husband both attack. I'd like to see how that looks, David. All right. Let's move on. And now again, we're talking about different things. What do you think Fulham need to do to win this match? This is a big match. Let's call what it is. It's a local derby. It's a huge match. What do Fulham need to do to win it?
I think, as I said before, we need to take the game to them. We don't want to be sitting back and letting them come on to us like Blackburn did, like Sheffield Wednesday did. We need to take the game to them. We need to keep the ball away from our defence, which is our Achilles heel as well, probably at the moment. But I think we need to make sure we bang in a few goals as well, because we could easily see goals at the other end. So I think we need to be aiming to score three goals in this game, because that should give us hopefully enough leeway that if we let a goal or two in, we still win the game. So and it's also about pride and about sort of realization of things. If we're going to have dominate play, if we're going to have a lot of possession, we want to see end results as well for it. We don't want to have a situation like on Tuesday night where we've had a lot of dominance, but we've had two shots on target and no goals. We want to see the ball in the back of the net. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. But I think with the way our defence is, with the threat that they pose as well, with obviously, you know, Austin and Phillips and other people you've mentioned, they could easily bang a couple of goals in, so I think we need to be aiming to score 3 goals.
Okay, very good point. And David, again, going back to your point about, you know, we were talking about before about shots, you know, shots on target. Something that I've been thinking about, Fulham seemed really wanting to play this intricate passing, you know, getting the perfect pass, perfect shot. Don't you think Fulham need to shoot just more from distance? Would that be such a bad thing if they just, you know, found an opening and say Kearney just let it rip like I saw Sakari Matilla shoot from distance? I think, you know, it's funny because, you know, he's probably not going to score, but I think that actually pays dividends later on in the match. Like Clint Dempsey used to do, David. He used to shoot all the time. And I think that opens things up. Well, what are your thoughts on that, just taking more shots?
I'm not sure who said it first, but maybe it was one of Clough's ones. But if you don't shoot, you don't score, you know. So, yeah, it does open a lot up because you take a shot. Defenders can sometimes stick their leg out. You can get deflections. You can get own goals. You can get corners. You can get the goalkeeper parries and someone else can follow in. You know, it opens up a lot of different things. But when you're close in and you just try and do a little tip-tap football, sure you can sometimes open up a situation where you have a nice easy tap in, but the latent power isn't there either, you know. So you've got probably maybe less chances of getting wild deflections or rebounds out to other people. So, yeah, you want to be banging the ball in. And we know Kearney can do that.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure who else. Hey, McCormack can definitely hit the ball as well.
Jamie O'Hara could do it too, I think.
Yeah, no, there are people who can do it most certainly. So I think you need to sometimes. It obviously depends on every situation. Some situations there's great balls on to people, and you know you see frustration where, and I've seen it before with McCormack taking shots from long range where there were much better options on. But certainly, you know, you've got to shoot. You've got to try and test the goalkeeper wherever you can, because you never know what will happen. And sometimes, you know, as I say, you can get a deflection or whatever can happen, or the ball can come back out. You can gain corners from them. You're not going to gain a corner from, like, you know, messing around in the box and getting robbed probably, but you will if you take a shot and it gets pushed around the post, and that creates new opportunities, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, David. No, good stuff, and that's why I wanted to talk about that, because I've been thinking about it as well. You know, the more you shoot, the better off you are. I say, you know, like you said, if you don't shoot, you're not going to score. So that's pretty obvious. All right, David. I now want you to predict Kit's starting 11, and then after that, after you predict that, then we're going to discuss Mike Gregg's potential starting 11, something that he threw out there. Again, he doesn't think Kit's going to go with it, but I want to talk about it because I like his ideas. But let's start with what you think Kit's going to do tomorrow.
I think, you know, we'll see Lonergan back in goal. From what we're led to believe, we're going to see Fredericks at right back. We'll see Richard Stearman, and now this is obviously the big one. I think Kit will have to stick with Ream there in the left centre back position, and Husband at left back. Yeah. Obviously, the situation with Ream is that he's Kit's signing, and Dan Byrne wasn't his signing, and last year he was reluctant to play Dan Byrne, and Dan Byrne's come in and done very well, but for him to drop Ream and put Byrne back in, I think would be, you know, a very dangerous precedent for Kit. You know, it would be a very, you know, he'd be undermining himself almost in a way.
Sure.
Whether that happens, I don't know. But I think there's probably less of a latent aerial threat from QPR than there was against, obviously, Peter Crouch, and there was against Wednesday. So perhaps it's less of a danger having perhaps Ream in there, who is, you know, inferior to Burn in the air, obviously. So, see, I think we'll see Burn and Stearman, as I say, with Husband and Fredericks in the fullback position, Lonergan in goal. I think he will continue with Tunnicliffe and O'Hara in central midfield. And I think just on the balance of the fact that I thought Pringle looked quite useful on Tuesday, Pringle will get the nod to start left midfield, and he'll play Kearney on the right. And then it'll be McCormack and Dembele up front. So basically, more or less an unchanged team again, bar the obviously Fredericks or Richards really at right back.
Okay, very good there, David. And you know, I'm glad that you brought up Ben Pringle, because Ben Pringle really showed up, you know, again all over the replay. You know, again we listened to it as well, and you could see it in the highlights. He actually played fairly well, so again I wouldn't be shocked if Ben Pringle starts. All right, David, now let's move on to, again, this is something that Mike Gregg tweeted out. He just threw it out there. He's not saying that Kit's going to go with this. But this is going to be his formation and team. So I'm going to read it to you, and you tell me what you think about what Mike is going with here. And I really like it. I got to be honest with you. I like this. It would be Lonergan and Nett. It would be a back three center backs of Ream, Byrne, and Stearman. You would have on the left James Husband, on the right Fredericks. Then you would have in the center, you'd have Tunnicliffe, O'Hara, Kearney. Then you would have up front Dembele and McCormack. Okay, so that would be your starting 11 and your formation. What are your thoughts about what Mike threw out there? I like it, David. Would you if you were a Kit, would you consider something like this?
Well, Kit probably wouldn't, because he's tactically naive and very set in his ways, I think. I don't know if he has the imagination, unfortunately, to come up with something like that. But this is actually the get out of jail card for Kit in a way, because it solves the quandary of having the Dan Byrne or Ream situation, because you get to include both. It's a face saver for Kit, and you know me, I've been a big fan of the back three for a long time. Ever since I started doing this show, I've talked about my dream to have a back three, as you know.
I know.
And
this way,
it gives you that. Obviously, on the right, Fredericks is in his ideal position, because this is apparently what he does best. I'm not so sure about Husband there, but certainly he would still be the right man for that role, I think, because he's shown he can go forward. So I assume he would be able to adapt to that role quite well. And let's say that gives you that balance as well. You have Byrne in the middle for the main heading duties, and you have, you know, your Stearman and Ream either side, and of course they can cover when either fullback goes forward, and you have a very strong central midfield, of course, doing that. Obviously, what you lose is you're losing your potential wide men. Obviously, in this case, you're losing Ben Pringle, because he's being replaced by having a, you know, someone outside him anyway, in James Husband. But on the right, there's no loss, because obviously we don't really have any natural width on the right anyway, because Kearney always comes inside. So yeah, you've got obviously you've got your strength there still in the centre midfield. So I think when you look at it on paper, it's a much stronger team, because you have three central defenders, you have three central midfielders, you still have. You have better width than we have now, and you have the same people up front. So, you know, I'd love to see Kit come out and do something like this. Even if it fails miserably, I'd like to actually just see that kind of, you know, adventure and, you know, inventiveness, I suppose, just to try something different. I mean, yes, it's easy to put these things down on paper, and then obviously to translate them out onto a pitch, when you've got to all play different roles, and it depends what team you're playing against and what their strengths are. I know you can't just blindly go out and do something, but in theory, yes, I'd love to see it, as you know. And it solves the problem we've had at Fulham for a while now, this lack of width, because you have you're pushed on fullbacks there, and you have the three central defenders, three central midfielders. So theoretically, through the middle, you're very, very strong as well. So, no, I'd love to see it. And as I say, Mike is kind of a man after my own heart there. It's what I've been suggesting, but I haven't really talked about it much lately, because I just don't have any faith in Kit to be as creative as this, or as adventurous as this, really.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's something that could be easily rectified if you started with this lineup and it really, really wasn't working.
You could go back to a 4-4-2.
Yeah, you could, because that's what they were thinking happened at Wednesday. It didn't happen Sheffield Wednesday, but
no,
people
it didn't.
Were suggesting they thought that what had happened, hadn't it, when they brought on Byrne for Pringle, because that gave you almost that personnel, in fact, didn't it? But no,
yep.
Kit wasn't that creative. But I'd love to see it, as I say. And, you know, I think I told Mike, I spoke to Mike earlier, and I said to him, you know, I like the theory of that, but I think we both agreed that we just don't see it happening.
I agree with both of you. It's not going to happen, but I would love to see it because I think it really takes advantage of our talent, and I think the formation could potentially work real well. But David, like you said, I don't think we're going to see it. But you know, looking at it on paper is different, like you said. But boy, it looks interesting. It looks like, and especially, and I think it might even work against QPR. You know, again. So, but I don't think we're going to see that, David. All right, listen, we only have 4 minutes left, so we have to get to predictions for the match. So let's start with the on the Cars Talk Facebook page. We have some predictions. Let's start with George Kenton. He has a 0-0 draw. Andy Newland has 3-2 to QPR. Dave Kettlehake has, I'm looking at 2-1 for the good guys. Not sure we have the mental to hold out Austin for the entire match, but we've also shown an ability to score, and the Cottage crowd should be rocking. Alex Lowy actually has 4-1 to QPR. Marty Ward says, I want to say a win, but by due to recent performances, I feel it's in our favor of QPR. QPR will lose 3-1, which adds pressure on. I'm not sure I understand where Marty's going. He says, I'll just read it one more time, David. He says, I want to say a win, but due to recent performances, I feel it's in favor of QPR. We're to lose 3-1, which adds pressure on Kit. So he's actually, Marty's predicting a 3-1 victory for QPR. Grant Harris has 3-2 to Fulham. Late McCormack goal lifts Fulham past the Strangers in the 85th minute. Reg Hollis has 2-0 to QPR. And Thea Evans has a 2-2 with nail-biting finish to scrape a point. Dan Layton has 2-1 to QPR. I think our center backs still need time to gel and learn each other's game. Gerard Sabate Navarro has 3-1 to Fulham. Kaka Christensen and McCormack scoring. So, David, we have a little bit of everything. We only have a little over 2.5 minutes. What's your prediction?
Well, the omens aren't brilliant because, you know, we haven't been great. Friday night is normally a bit of a jinx for us live on Sky as well. But I'm gonna try and go with my what Fulham need to do. And I said that we need to score 3. So I'm going to put myself out on a limb and say we will score 3, and it'll be 3-2 to us, and we'll scrape through. But I think it could easily go wrong as well, Russ. It really could. But I'm going to hope that it just goes right for once.
Okay. David, I'm going to go with you, but I'm going to go a little bit higher and a little bit more bolder. And this is when you're going to be calling for the calling for the paramedics on me, maybe, or the or take me to the crazy house. David, I'm predicting 4-1 to Fulham. I'm predicting a rout. I'm predicting a hat trick from, yes, Ross McCormack, and a goal from Moussa Dembele. I think Fulham are going to run riot on them. I think this is going to be a rout. They are due for a huge victory. It's going to happen against QPR. That's my prediction. And I know you think I'm crazy, as always, but I'm going out on a limb. I'm saying 4-1 to Fulham. Any final thoughts?
Your brain has been starved of oxygen from when you were fasting earlier this week, I think.
Possibly, David. Well, listen, this has been a great show. And thank you, as always, for joining me, my friend. I also want to mention, you didn't hear the beginning, but I want to thank the Stoke City supporter who actually wrote into to Fulham FC, and I shared the email on air. Definitely thank him for sharing that, and for the Fulham supporters who helped out the Stoke City supporters on Tuesday night. Again, your testament to what great fans you are. All right, David, it's time to wrap this up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Boys and girls.